So I'm in Chicago. I've quit my job. I've almost run out of money. You're young, you don't care. And I met Robert, who's now my co-founder. He had mixed a CD of mine a couple of years before through friends of friends of friends. So we meet up, we're having a beer, and then he's like, "Oh, I'm spending all this money on ISDN every month," because he was a sound engineer. And he's like, "But we've got this thing called the internet, right?" I thought, "I've got a 1 megabit internet in my studio. Why can I use that? Then it's free." And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." And because I, had been doing software development and I knew the internet, it just made sense. The two of us really bonded, and I went home to New Zealand, and he stayed in Chicago, and we built Source Connect.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Rebecca Wilson. As co-founder, technical director, and CEO for Source Elements, my next guest celebrates her two decades with the company as it launches a completely re-engineered remote collaboration platform built on the knowledge gained after 20 years of working closely with her customers and industry partners, including Avid and Dolby. Since Source Connect was first released in 2005, she's advocated for the benefits of remote collaboration in all sorts of areas, including sound engineering, voice acting, music performance and production, film and cinema production, and education. Originally trained as a composer, she's a software developer and expert in the fields of music technology and networking. And as a New Zealand native, she understands very well how important it is to be connected even when separated by oceans. There's no excuse for creativity to suffer just because of where we are in the world. Her name is Rebecca Wilson, and I'm looking forward to talking with her about how Source Connect is making our creative lives easier, what it's like being a woman in a male-dominated field, and where she sees this kind of technology taking us into the future. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Rebecca Wilson. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rebecca. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think there's a lot of interesting things that we'll be talking about. Thanks so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Jody. Me too. Thank you for inviting me. It's really great to sit here and talk with you more in depth. I'm
Yes.
looking forward to it.
Yeah, likewise. Well, I usually start the discussions about sound, where I ask you about a story that you might have of an early memory of how sound moved you. Do you have one of
Oh,
those?
Wow. Yeah, that's a great question. Gosh, I've not thought about this before, but going back and just like asking my brain, like, what's the first sound you heard? I'm going to say it's my father playing the guitar. I must have been 4 or 5. And I can see the house that we were living in at the time. So, yeah, around that age. And just those lovely, warm feelings of, intimacy. Thank you for asking that. He died when I was quite young. So it's always nice to when
to
I
hear that.
Have a good
yeah.
memory. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I grew up with kind of the same experience. My parents used to have sing-along time rather than story time when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So me and my sister and the dogs would all gather on a bed and my dad would play guitar and my mom would sing. And it was a very cherished family memory for me too. So I get it. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's a lovely memory of how music moves you at a very early age. Did that influence where you decided to take your career?
Oh, of course. I mean, it was a couple of years after he died that my mother used to take me to church, as most, you know, back in the 80s, it was what you did. Mm-hmm. And to be the, you know, living in a small town on a Sunday, it's how you communicate with the community. And I just remember I went up to her after a service and tugged on her skirt and said, I need to learn to play the piano. I don't remember why I decided that was important to me, but it was certainly all of that, you know, those built-in feelings of wanting that music back in my life. And my father had left behind a lot of records, vinyl records of classical music, and I would just listen to them over and over again. And I mean, it's just, it's a part of you, you know. I think anyone who's a musician knows that it's usually genetic, it comes through the family, and can sometimes pop out from nowhere. But you know, when it's there, when it's in you, it's just something you're compelled to seek out.
Yeah, so you became a composer, and you did that.
I did.
For how long?
So I started composing around the age of 10, because again, growing up in a very small town, out of boredom, and then I went to university and studied orchestral composition and ensemble, orchestration, and then fell in love with computers and started doing software programming, and then I worked as an electronic composer, sort of experimental composition, doing live electronics, working, you know, playing the cello and making, you know, sounds at the same time and working with a computer. I did that until Source Elements started. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what I was doing.
That was
in 2003, 2004.
Okay.
I was in my mid 20s.
So do you think that the music composing helped you with the tech? Or like,
it's the same part of
relation?
The brain.
Yeah.
I think,
okay.
You know, it's math, music, science. You know, many of the people in my math class, you know, at high school were also really good musicians. It's just that there's a similar, the brain neurons there are just very similar.
It's interesting because I never thought of it that way. Yeah. So thank you for enlightening me.
Also
on that.
Cooking.
Yeah.
We have a saying among composers, you know, when we're hanging out with a bunch of composers, it'll be like, if you can't cook, you're not a real composer. Seriously.
Really? I did not realize
we're
that.
We're obsessed with good food. It's
oh,
also
my goodness.
Something that goes with that part of the brain.
I like good food, but I cannot cook at all. I'm a singer, though. I stopped writing songs probably after I started facilitating it for other people in the early days of the internet. So, yeah.
I can't sing, so I'm so envious. I would love... Oh my God, if I could express myself with my voice, it would be amazing, but it just comes out raspy. You don't want to hear it.
Well, we all have our talents, I guess, that we lean into, and composition is not something that I would ever be able to do. So, wow. But yeah, it's interesting because I know that for me, I also love the logic of computers. So I used to write songs. I mean, I started doing that when I was 11, but, you know, it's kind of similar, you know, that I was bored and just decided to start doing that. But I never learned the piano like you did. I played by ear for a little bit, but I don't know if you know a lot about playing by ear. I'm sure you probably dabbled yourself, but there comes a certain point where you just can't increase your knowledge. You're kind of stuck at a certain level, and it's really hard unless you have the theory and you're able to expand your knowledge to be able to do things differently after a certain amount of time. So I think I got lazy. So that's kind of what happens. Like when you are able to do something without too much effort, and then it stops. So then you stop working at it, and that's the death knell of creativity right there.
It really is.
I know we're all super busy and pulled in so many different directions these days, so I wanted to take a moment to celebrate and thank the people who have taken the time to review this podcast. Heather Former Hooter writes, "Amazing voice and knowledge. Jody's voice and knowledge of audio is impressive, and I'm not easily impressed." Thanks so much, Heather. I'm really glad you decided to check out this podcast, and I hope you'll keep listening. There's always more to come. But for now, let's get back to the show. So learning a lot about composition and understanding that the logical part of that leans into the tech, then so you got into the tech part of Source Connect and Source Elements. And what was the transition there? What happened to bring you into that?
I've been working as a composer in Europe. So I'm originally from New Zealand. It's important to understand. It's central to much of all this. And New Zealand is very far away. Anyone who's been there will attest how long you have sat on a plane. When I get on a plane and go home, I sit in my seat and I say, I live here now, because it's the only way I can cope. I say, this is my home. And, you know, just sort of tell my brain 24 hours of the seat. This is my seat.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's very far away. And when you're in New Zealand, especially growing up before the internet on an island, you know, the media was very regulated. You know, we didn't get news, you know, obviously we had radio news and television news that would come in, but TV, movies, magazines, everything's late. And you just, you know, and so I didn't know that, but when the internet sort of happened in the mid 90s, when I started going online, then I realized, I said, oh, wow, I'm like, not at all and no awareness of what's going on really outside the world. You know, I read lots of books and everything, you know, but mostly fiction. So I remember one time, like in the 1997, I remember when Princess Diana died, because I was online on RIC and I learned that before everyone else.
Yeah.
I went out and told everybody. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, how do you know? The internet, what? That's crazy. And so it was like one of those first moments of finding out that you can connect to the rest of the world with this medium.
Oh yeah, and mind exploding.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Fascinated with it. Pretty much dropped out of university and just spent the next 5 years on the internet.
Wow.
Taught myself how it works and you know, hung out with lots of really cool, amazing people. And then I ended up in Europe working as a composer at a music institute, electronic music institute, you know, building instruments and writing software and helping, you know, artistic projects happen and touring. And I just, you know, did that. And, you know, when you're young, you think, wow, this is amazing, but I don't want this anymore. Looking back, I should have just stayed. But I left. And on the way home to New Zealand, you have to stop somewhere. You know, there's no plane that goes all direct. So I went through Chicago because Chicago is a really good music town. I had some friends there. And so I'm in Chicago. I've quit my job. I've almost run out of money. You know, you're young, you don't care. And I met Robert, who's now my co-founder. He had mixed a CD of mine a couple of years before through friends of friends of friends. So we meet up, we're having a beer, and then he's like, oh, you know, I'm spending all this money on ISDN every month, because he was a sound engineer. And he's like, but we've got this thing called the internet, right? And I thought, I've got a 1 megabit internet in my studio, why can I use that? Then it's free. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And because I, you know, had been doing software development and I knew the internet, it just made sense. The two of us really bonded, and I went home to New Zealand and he stayed in Chicago and we built Source Connect. So,
wow. Yeah.
It needed that distance for it to work, because if we'd have made it in the same office, probably would have had bugs that we never would have found, because it had to be built online.
That's true. Yeah. I guess to even link the two of you.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But yeah, it's great that that you had the opportunity to meet and find someone like-minded who was as interested in all of this as you were. That's that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm curious about something also, because I know I used to sell computers in the early days computers, like hardware. Like the early days.
Like,
and I was on the
or...
internet. Yeah. Like before that was a cool thing to do. And I will say that it was not the most hospitable place for a woman to be.
Mm-hmm.
And like this. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you what it was like being a woman in tech when you were getting started. Like, how did you navigate that?
Oh, man. Here's my favorite story about this. So I was living in Australia. Well, most New Zealanders move to Australia at some point because that's what you do. It's a big city.
Okay.
And I was working in a corporate outfit. I don't know what they were doing, just, you know, corporate software. And I went in for the job interview, and they show me where the programmers work. And it's this dark room in the middle of the building with no windows. And this is 1998, and they have pictures of naked women on the walls. And I just walk in, and I'm like, okay. Now, my decision was, okay, I'm not going to work in this room, but I want the job, so I'll just make my terms, and I'll say I'm going to go work where the designers are, because, you know, normal people. And so who sat next to windows with natural light. So I just took my computer, and actually I built my own computer, which they thought was weird because I was all on Linux back then. And so I sat there, and that was how I sort of dealt with it. You know, it's by just making it on your own terms. However, I will say, the majority of people that I worked with, the majority of men, were nothing but welcoming and, you know, completely interested and as equally curious as I was. You know, it was, you got to have some kind of like gumption and courage to do anything that's interesting, I think. And so that curiosity that I had, that maybe helped me get into a lot of areas where maybe others might have found difficult. But
curiosity will take you a long way. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that people made you feel welcome when you cared about them making you feel welcome.
When you care about the same thing, you know, that comes through, that becomes obvious. And it's not like the 50s where they're like, you're a woman, you can't do math. You know, we learned that was not true. Very good. Women's brains are actually very good at mathematics.
But, that's definitely the case. And I think the only reason that I asked that is because from my experience selling computers, I was often, you know, mistaken for the secretary.
Oh yes. That happened to me up until I got a bit older. And then also I think maybe the culture changed a bit. Yes. One of the first like trade shows I went to was like 2006. And I go into one of these big trade shows, you know, and I'm just there by myself because, you know, we're remote, you know, we don't have an office. It's not like we go and hang out together. And I just walked to this trade show by myself, and I'm walking around, and it's just groups of men in suits standing there talking to each other, and no one talked to me. I was very confused and a little upset because I'm like, you don't know who I am if I've got business, you know. Sure, I'm a young woman in a skirt, but you don't know what technology integrations that could happen from the result of our relation, you know, our conversations. Nothing. I did not have a single conversation. It hurt so much. I didn't know how to start one. You know, I was too young also. But that changed over time. However, I do also remember, this is like 10 years ago, so not that long ago, I'm at another trade show, and we've got a booth, and I'm there as the, you know, the CEO, and talking to some person about something. He came back the next day, and he comes up to me and says, I'm really sorry, but I thought you were just a sales girl and I wanted to apologize. Oh, I'm not kidding. I wish I was kidding. And at first I'm like, firstly, why did you tell me? Like, keep that to yourself.
Yeah, you don't need to let me know.
No, I'm not understanding what was going on there. And secondly, like, this is, I'm looking around me going, you're right, because this was still the era of like booth babes. And so I made a mission. Every trade show I went to, they don't do it now. I went up to every vendor who had booth babes and said, do not do this. I will not do business with you. And it is offensive, and please stop. And it did stop. I'm obviously not just because of me, but I think enough of us spoke up, and trade shows are much, much, much more inclusive now. A couple of years ago, I was at NAB, and we were, you know, with a group of young women, and said, look, why don't you walk around with us and we'll introduce you to the people we know, because, you know, now I've been in business long enough, I've got lots of contacts. So I'm like, at least I can get back. So these, you know, women in their 20s, then they don't feel so isolated. And so the, obviously this mentorship of older women is what's become such a huge movement. You know, we're so supportive. You've got Girls in Gear, and you've got Rise, and you've got, Women in Streaming Media. I mean, it's just incredible now, the amount of support that we're getting from each other, and that's just special.
It really is. I love it. Yeah. And I remember those Booth Babe era as well, because I went to E3 in 1999 as a marketing
Ooh,
person.
boy.
And oh my God.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was quite something. And yes, there were Booth Babes all over the place. And yeah, it's definitely off-putting for other women.
Yeah, it is, because it just makes you feel like, oh, do I not belong here in my role that I am in?
Yeah,
So, yeah.
it's like either you're a sex object or you are, there in glasses and completely logical, and that's all you're there for. Like, what, what? And then they ignore you anyway. So, yeah, it was weird. It was weird. And I agree that over time that has definitely changed, and it's really wonderful to see where it's going now. I'm encouraged by hearing your description there. That's really good to know.
Do you want to sound your absolute best when you're being interviewed on a podcast or when you're hosting your own show? I have a podcast episode and free downloadable worksheet called Sounding Your Best as a Podcast Guest off of the audiobrandingpodcast.com main page. Just click on the little square graphic to the left of the player displaying my podcast trailer. It gives you some comprehensive suggestions for where to start or for improving the sound you already have, including the type of microphones to consider and why, ideas for soundproofing your recording environment, and suggestions on how to get the best sound when you're being remotely recorded on services like Riverside FM or Squadcast. Don't let bad audio quality hold you back from being the best podcast guest or host you can be. And of course, if you happen to need voiceover for your intro and outro, feel free to get in touch. I'm happy to help. And now, back to the podcast.
So I want to get into a little bit more about Source Connect, because when you developed it, you were looking into latency, right? Like that was a big issue. And of course, when you're trying to, for instance, connect with someone from New Zealand to Chicago, there's going to be a little bit of a lag. So how do you deal with that? Why do you feel that's such an important topic?
Well, it's actually just a lucky thing that the time it takes to send data around the world using fiber optics or traveling in light is just fast enough that we can have a conversation. It's just pure luck. Maybe the world could have been bigger, or the speed of light was slower, or our brains would be a bit different. But so if you go back to firstly, think about the evolution of the human brain and speech. We evolved to speak in small groups with each other, right? Like that's what's normal. So our brain's latency when we're standing there talking to each other is it's about 10 milliseconds, because the time it takes to cross a room or go through physical airspace. And however, you can still have a conversation with someone who's on the other side of a room, not a large room, and if you then have enough patience, you could have a conversation yelling to somebody across a football field. Because that's latency, because again, it's going to have to travel through a lot more air. But that's actually a lot larger than it is. Like right now, I'm in Europe and you're in the United States. The time it takes to cross over the ocean in fiber optic is about 30, 40 milliseconds, which is, a bit longer than if we were in the same room together. However, their brains are very, very good at compensating. And so we've kind of like, it's not like we've evolved to have video calls at high latency, but that range of latency in which we're able to compress audio, put it in a packet, send it to the internet, decompress it, send it out to the headphones, is just short enough that we can talk. It's kind of the perfect, Goldilocks spot. We got very lucky with physics in the universe for this.
Yeah.
So latency is not really an issue when we're talking about having a conversation.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.